This afternoon, I'm going to begin not with the Bible or the Spirit of Prophecy, but with a very interesting article in the Reader's Digest. I'll not read all of it because there isn't time, but just a few thoughts from it you might be interested in hearing. The name of the article is Modern Courtship, The Great Illusion. The Trouble with American Marriage, says Dr. James H.S. Bossard, is American courtship. American parents permit and even encourage their children to select their mates in just about the worst of all possible ways. Then he compares or contrasts what is done in large areas of the world other than the United States, and he says, perhaps the East has been correct in thinking that finding the right mate is too difficult and important a job to trust to the young. Adolescent dating is far from an unmitigated joy. Young people often find themselves going steady, even though bored to death with each other. There comes a time when they want to break up. And for some, this is a painful form of self-assertion for which they lack the courage or tact. Sometimes when the break does come, it is a tragedy for one or both, and a tragedy which, since they started so early, may be repeated several times. Parents seem to think of the young love affair as a glorious and carefree experience, Dr. Carl Fred B. Broderick has said, but often there's nothing carefree about it at all. Courtship calls ideally for a good, hard, realistic look at the other person. Mere glamour, charm, and physical attractiveness are a poor basis for a marriage which, if all goes well, may last 50 years or more. It is a good idea to see a prospective mate in as many situations as possible, particularly difficult and unglamorous ones, and to study family and friends, which often tell more about a person than he ever reveals himself. This advice may sound callous, but it produces far better results than any romantic illusion that the mate created by fate can be recognized in one explosive glance. Those thoughts, you might be interested in those observations. Now, thank the Lord, we're on a different road. We're on the upward road. We're on the King's Highway. Turn again, please, to Adventist Home, page 49, and let's refresh our minds with that wonderful statement in the paragraph at the top of the page. What I want to study with you some more today, every step. Let every step toward a marriage alliance be characterized by modesty, simplicity, sincerity, and an earnest purpose to please and honor God. As I was meditating on this expression, every step, there came to my mind a statement from another book dealing with counsel in general. And I looked it up, and I'll share this sentence with you. It's found in Testimonies to Ministers, page 501. Meekness and lowliness of heart will lead men to desire counsel at every step. What are the two words here similar to the one we've just read? Every step. And if we have the right attitude, we'll desire what? We'll desire counsel. When? At every step. At the last step? Yes, the last step. The one before the last? Which one won't we desire counsel at? Which one? None of them. Meekness and lowliness of heart will lead men to desire counsel at every step. Do you know, folks, it's a wonderful advance step when we get to the place where we can tolerate counsel, when we can take it without being irritated or get depressed. But here we have something more wonderful than that. It's what? desiring it. And desiring it where? At every step. Oh, what a wonderful ideal that is set before. I say this, to reach this ideal fully would require a perfect individual. Wouldn't it? Yes. But we can all move in this direction and pray in this direction. Now let me point this out, friends, what counsel is. We're going to be studying counsel today as it relates to these steps. First, let me point out what it is not. Counsel is not permission. Sometimes students come to me and they say, I want a counsel, and they set before me a certain question or proposition. And sometimes I say, now, what is it you want? Do you want counsel or do you want permission? More than once I've told folks I would give them permission to do things, I wouldn't advise them to do at all. And getting counsel is not getting permission. Getting permission is securing the decision of another person whose decision is what affects what you can do or not do. Getting counsel is getting advice to help you make up your mind what your decision is going to be. Do you see the difference? It's a tremendous difference. Now, if we could understand that, it would relax us a bit about this matter of counsel. Several years ago, the railroad was planning to put an additional track through this place. It would have cut off our lake and into the orchard where the new sanitarium is now. Well, we were of course perplexed about it, and we cast about to get all the advice we could. And the various ones that we sought counsel was an attorney down here in Atlanta. We were advised to go to him, that he would give us some good advice. The man who was manager at that time and I went down and spent about an hour in his office one evening and got his advice. When we got through, we asked him for his bill, and it was $50. It cost us $50 to listen to him for an hour. But we didn't take his advice, not a bit of it. Before that experience was over, we had the privilege of going into one of the leading offices of the state of Georgia and having one of the most experienced judges of this state sit down with us and listen to our problem. And he called another judge in that same building, and those two judges sat down and gave us freely of their time and didn't charge us a nickel. We listened to their advice. Did we throw our $50 away on the other man? I don't think so. It was part of our education. My point is this. Even though we paid the $50 to the first attorney, we didn't have to follow his advice. And if you don't have to follow a man's advice when you're paying him $50, you certainly don't have to follow his counsel when you're not paying him anything. Do you? So don't be afraid of counsel. That is, if you really want to get wisdom, of course. There are people who are so anxious to do a certain thing and so afraid that somebody will change their minds that it's very difficult for them to get counsel. And of course, if we're in that state of mind, we just as well save our time and money, and the other fellows too. But remember this, and I repeat it that I may emphasize it. Counsel is not permission. Getting counsel is not getting permission. Getting counsel is getting advice. And let me go a step further. Good counsel is not, well, I think you should do this, or I think you shouldn't do that. That's not the highest form of counsel. Good counsel is helping you find out whether you have thought of all the factors or not. good counsel is helping you check through the column of figures and being sure that all the figures are in the column before you add it up. Good counsel is suggesting to you Bible verses or statements in the spirit of prophecy that might bear upon your problem. All of these things belong to good counsel. And I repeat, good counsel is not just saying, well, I think I'd do this, or I think I'd do something else. That kind of counsel, if you may call it that, can be bought for a dime a dozen, and that's about what it's worth. Just to run around this campus, for instance, and ask a dozen people, do you think I should do this, or do you think I should do that? And you talk to this one, and this one says, yes, I think you should go to X place. Another one says, well, I think you better go to Y place. So you keep going, keep going. It's not worth very much. Good counsel is to help you find your answer, find God's answer. All right. Now, let's notice a statement about counsel. Two statements. Proverbs 19:27. A few lessons ago, when you were spending time in a page-by-page study of messages to young people, I think doubtless all were impressed with the repeated urgings of the spirit of prophecy to seek counsel in this matter of courtship and marriage. But there is a kind of counsel that we want to avoid. Proverbs 19:27. Shall we read it together? Cease, my son, to hear the instruction that causeth to err from the words of knowledge. What's the first word? What does that mean? Stop. Is that a red light or a green light? Red light. Stop. Stop what? Stop listening. To what? Instruction or counsel or advice that causes you to do what? Err from the words of knowledge. My dear friends, one of the saddest things in religious circles today, in the popular churches, and it can even creep in the remnant church, is people seeking advice on what to do about what's written in the Bible and the spirit of prophecy. Out in the popular churches, it takes this form. A person is reading his Bible and comes to the fourth commandment. And they find there that what day is the Sabbath? Seventh day is the Sabbath. Or they may hear the voice of prophecy or faith for today and find. Or they may get a book from a call porter or read these times. However, they come face to face with the law of God that says the seventh day is the Sabbath, and they go to their preachers for counsel. And 9 times out of 10, do you know what kind of advice they get? The kind this verse is talking about. Advice that causes them to do what? Err from the words of knowledge. What a solemn responsibility and a fearful responsibility it is for men in holy office, claiming to be shepherds of the flock, to sit there and say, well, I wouldn't be worried about that. After all, everybody except a few strange people keeps Sunday. Everybody keeps Sunday, and the Christian church has kept Sunday for many centuries, and Christ rose on that day, and so on and on and on and on. And is it a fact that nearly everybody keeps Sunday? And is it a fact that most of the Christian church have done that way for centuries? And is it a fact that Christ rose on that day? All of those are facts. But the sum total of the advice is, don't worry about what the fourth commandment says and these few Seventh-day Adventists do. Don't let that trouble you. God is bigger than that. Do you see what I mean, friend? Now, God says to do what with that kind of counsel? Cease to what? To listen to it. Don't listen to it. And in the same way, my dear friends, there are men and women who claim to be members of the remnant church, who when some young person gets stirred up because of something they read in messages to young people or Adventist home or ministry of healing or councils on diet and food or fundamentals of education or volume 5 or some other inspired book, here's a young person gets stirred up over something about literature or something about amusement and recreation or something about fiction or something about drama or something about courtship and marriage or something about some of these other standards. And they go for advice, for counsel. And exactly the situation that I have just described from one of the popular Protestant churches about the Sabbath, exactly the same sort of a situation is reenacted over something that the messenger of God has written with an inspired pen. And God tells you and me to do what with that sort of thing? Cease to hear. All right. Then listen. No man is a good counselor unless he believes the Bible and the spirit of prophecy with all his heart. Unless he leads you to exalt these inspired writings, not to twist them or pervert them or change them or modify them, but just believe them. No man is a good counselor. And 100,000 men who bring in merely the wisdom of this world, it doesn't mean a thing in contrast with one verse of Scripture or one paragraph of the Spirit of Prophecy. Do you agree? Oh, friend, this is the glorious privilege then of the child of God to know that there is certainty in what Jesus says. And yet, there is room for human counsel, not to take the place of the inspired writings, but as I have said, to help us to become acquainted with, to help us to see certain references that we may have overlooked or certain principles that we may not have thought of. Now, Proverbs, the 20th chapter and the 5th verse. Another wonderful verse on counsel. Do you have it? Let us read it together. Counsel in the heart of man is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out. There you have it. How do you get water out of a well? You let down the bucket and then pull. Now, there are other places to get water. There are springs that are just spouting up, artesian wells that are gushing forth. But the illustration that Solomon is using here is that of a deep well. And good counsel is often way down there in those hidden depths. And to get it, you must do what? Let down the bucket and draw it out. Let me tell you something, friend. Some of the most valuable counsel that you can ever get on this question of association and courtship and marriage, you'll have to go after. It won't be spurting at you like a fire hose. It won't be gushing forth. To change the figure, it won't be waiting for you and grab you when you're not looking. No. You will have to seek for it. You will have to search for it. You'll have to draw it out. Oh, how wonderful it is to me when I find a young person that really wants to know the will of the Lord, the way of the Lord. All right. Now, as you studied in messages to young people in that closing section, the lessons a couple of weeks ago, who did you find that we were to counsel with? Who first of all? Yes, but before that? With God. All right. Counsel with God. And who else? God-fearing parents. And who else? Did you find anybody else? Well, in the Bible, we would be counseling with God. But did you find anybody else that we're to counsel with besides God and God-fearing parents? Leaders in the church? Men of experience? All right. Now I hope you have references on that. And I'm going to give you some right now. we won't turn to them, but just put them down, because, and most of you have read these in messages to young people, but I'm going to give them to you in Adventist Home. On Counsel with God, Adventist Home 70 and 71. You'll find three statements on those two pages. Adventist Home 70 and 71. On Counsel with God-Fearing Parents, Adventist Home, page 73 and 75. You'll find three statements on those two pages dealing with counseling with God-fearing parents. Then on Counselors Other Than God and Our God-Fearing Parents, you'll find in Adventist Home, page 72, and Adventist Home, page 81, you'll find three statements on those two pages on other individuals. And you'll find an additional one in Messages to Young People, page 445, Men of Experience in the Church. But now, in our lesson today, we've already noted that meekness and lowliness of heart will lead men to desire counsel where? At every step. Now, in this series of classes, I'm giving you seven steps. And I wouldn't be dogmatic about that. Your experience might be eight or six or some other number. But for an outline, this will be helpful to us. We've already seen the first step. It is what? Faithfulness to duty in the parental home. The last step, obviously, would be marriage itself. And the step before marriage is the step of engagement. And the step before engagement is the step of courtship. Now you might wonder what these three steps are here after this faithfulness to duty in the parental home. What are these before we get to courtship? Well, I'll introduce that this afternoon and then we'll study it a bit more. But this second step right here is counsel. I haven't room to write it out all there, but do I need a companion now? Do I need a companion now? Now, why do I put that in there? Well, suppose I were a good mechanic, which I'm not, but suppose I were, and some young man should come to me and say, Brother Verzee, I wish you'd go to town with me. I've been looking around at the different cars, and I wish you'd look them over with me. And I say, why, are you going to buy a car? Well, I don't know that I am right now, but I like to look around at them. And I wish you'd come and help me look them over. Well, I say, do you have the money to get a car? No. Do you need a car right now? Well, I could use one. I'd like it to run around in. Do you begin to get the picture, friend? Is the important thing for a young man in that situation to decide today whether he's going to get a Ford or a Plymouth or a Chevrolet or a Volkswagen? No. The first thing is deciding whether or not it's time to do what? Get a car. And if it isn't, you see, we can only claim Philippians 4:19 when we need something. My God shall supply all your need. And this is a very important step in the sequence. Counsel, do I need a companion now? Has God's time come for me to seek a companion? Now, when do you think this counsel should be? After two hearts are entwined? When to interfere with that would be to cut cords? Wouldn't God have a better plan than that? Yes, He has, my dear friend. Let me tell you, broken hearts are not pretty things. And I've seen a lot of them in 40 years in the ministry, a lot of broken hearts. And most of them don't need to be at all.